Now, let's move to item 294.
Accept the City of Portland Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for fiscal year ended June 30, 2014.
Mr. Rust. Morning.
Good morning, Mayor Hills and members of the City Council. For the record, I'm Ken Rust. I'm the City's Chief Financial Officer, and I'm the Director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. Today, we're presenting to you for your acceptance the City's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or CAFR, for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2014. We've distributed copies of the printed CAFR to you, which looks like this, and it's also available to citizens on our website for their review. Before I get started with the presentation of the document, I'd like to acknowledge the fact that we now have a new city controller and accounting division manager who has joined me this morning, Michelle Kirby. Michelle is a certified public accountant and has more than 25 years of governmental accounting, auditing, and financial management experience. Prior to coming to the City of Portland, Michelle worked for the City of Phoenix, Arizona, as in different capacities, but the most recent being Deputy Finance Director and City Controller. So we're really happy to have Michelle here to lead the accounting division team. We have lots of work for her, and she's very happy to be out of the sun, she tells us. In terms of other acknowledgments, as you can imagine, putting together the city's CAFR is a pretty big undertaking each and every year, and it involves many different individuals. And I want to recognize the hard work that goes into the publication and preparation of this document. Certainly, we have city bureaus that are involved bringing in accounting information into the document. The city auditor's office is responsible for managing a lot of the work in the contract with Moss Adams, our independent auditor, and the work that they do, and that's a critical part of the preparation process. And, of course, the accounting division staff within my bureau plays an integral role in putting the document together. This most recent CAFR preparation was more challenging for a couple different reasons. First, this year, we actually implemented some new software called Caseware, which will help in the publication of the document. And any time you implement new software, it takes a little bit more of an effort. And we also had some turnover in the leadership positions of the accounting division that made it further challenging. So this was a difficult year, but we got the CAFR done sooner than we had expected and with great results. And I want to give some special accolades to the folks that really helped make that happen. First, Satish Nath, the director of the city's Enterprise Business Solution team, really helped in the management of this Caseware project into the production of the CAFR itself. We had a lot of support from OMF's Business Operations Group. Certainly the accounting division's technical accounting team played an integral role in this. And I'd ask the council to acknowledge the hard work of those individuals. And we have some folks here today that I'd like to have stand and be recognized.
Thank you very much. Good work.
Thank you. So what is the CAFR? The CAFR represents one of the two key financial reports that the council either adopts or accepts. Right now, you're working on the budget process leading up to the adopted budget. And the budget tells the council where we plan to go in terms of the expenditure of public funds. And the financial information in the budget document is primarily produced on a cash basis, so how much money we have available in the bank to fund the different programs each and every year. The CAFR, to contrast, tells the citizens and the council where we have been in terms of the expenditures that we've made and how those expenditures and funds affect the city's financial condition. The CAFR presents financial statements for the city's various funds using generally accepted accounting principles, or GAAP, that are promulgated by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, or GASB. So the information is often prepared either on a modified accrual or a full accrual basis, which is a little different view than the cash basis of the budget document. Included in the CAFR document itself is a discussion by management, the management's discussion and analysis of the city's financial condition, which if there's one section of the CAFR to read, that probably gives you the best summary of all the financial information, the changes year over year, and the key things that that are going on with respect to the city's financial operations that help you understand really what the document's telling you. It also includes statistical information and trends that are helpful for readers of the document to get a sense of where the city has been in the recent past. So let's talk about good news first. The city's external auditors, Moss Adams, have offered an unqualified opinion as to the fairness and accuracy of the city's financial statements that have been prepared in accordance with GAAP. And that unqualified opinion is integral to the city's AAA bond rating and, in fact, for all the bond ratings of the city. The city's CAFR complies with state law. City fund balances continue to grow. In fact, for governmental funds, we've increased fund balances by almost $69 million, and the general fund itself, year over year, has increased about $18 million. The city's CAFR has received the GFOA's Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting, and we have received this award from the GFOA continuously for more than 30 years. And the CAFR continues to feature beautiful photographic scenes of Portland as seen through the camera lens of the accounting division's Lois Summers. And if you haven't looked at the CAFR, the pictures are beautiful. The not-so-good news. Through the audit process, Moss Adams has identified several weaknesses and deficiencies in the city's accounting processes and practices that we will need to address going forward. There have been some compliance findings, and there have been some best practice observations that we will be addressing. But none of these audit findings were significant enough to affect their ability to offer the unqualified opinion as to the fairness and accuracy of the financial information presented in our CAFR. I'd like to turn a little bit my attention and time to the more perplexing news. And I know that there was a discussion about this last year when the CAFR was presented. And it really deals around the city's net position and what's going on with that particular measurement. When you look at the city's net position, which includes citywide view, governmental activities, and business-type activities like water and sewer and things like that, our net position totals about $2.3 billion or so. However, the city's net position for governmental activities, which includes the general fund, the transportation operating fund, and the grants fund, continues to decline, and it's been declining for a number of years. In the fiscal year ending 2014, the net position for governmental activities declined by $142 million, and right now the net position of the governmental activity view has decreased to $212 million total. Next year at this time, I fully expect to tell you that the net position for the governmental wide view has turned negative. In simple terms, net position declines when expenses exceed revenues on a GAAP basis. We mentioned how we measure and report our financial information. And this can be caused by several different factors, including increases in pension and other similar liabilities as measured under GAAP, increases in bonds payable with no offsetting increase in assets, and then recognition of non-cash expenses such as depreciation that contribute to expenses exceeding revenues on a GAAP basis. So I want to talk a little bit of those three areas to give you some information about what's really driving that and to help you understand what you need to worry about versus what you just need to be watching. Let's first talk about the pension piece. And I know that you understand and have heard quite a bit about the city's unique Fire and Police Disability Retirement Fund program, which is funded on a cash basis. This was a program created by voters in 1948 and reformed under the leadership of Dan Saltzman in 2006. It's always been an interesting anomaly in terms of pension funding and pension plans in the United States. Currently, the unfunded liability for FPD&R, which is reported in the CAFR document, is $2.7 billion. The amount that we are actually placing on our balance sheet today is about $1.4 billion. So not all of it has been recognized on our financial statements as of yet, but that will change. The value of the city's dedicated property tax levy that funds the liability, because we have a voter-approved property tax levy that pays pension and disability costs each year, the value of that on our financial statements is shown as zero. So we get zero credit for the receivable that we have to pay the liability of the pension fund under a GAAP GASB view.
Why?
They don't recognize the future receivable and tax collection as an asset. And so from an accounting point of view, under GAAP GASB, that simply is not. The revenues are recognized when we receive them, but the value of that over a period of time into the future is not recognized as an asset. That's something that maybe we'd have a conversation with the GASB folks about, because this is clearly an outlier, and I'll talk a little bit more about how that's going to affect us going forward. I mentioned that we reformed the fire and police pension system in 2006. All new hires are now in the Oregon PERS system and the OPSERP program. We're funding their benefits when earned as opposed to when they need to be paid. So over a long period of time, the system will convert to a fully funded system, but it's going to take a long time until that happens. And I'm happy to report that the plan and the reforms are performing exactly as we expected they would. In fact, the most recent levy capacity study, which I think you've received,
right,
shows that there's a near 100% probability over the period of time that they look like that they looked at that the FPD&R levy will always be sufficient to pay pension and disability benefits when due. So we made some huge strides in reforming that system and making sure that the cost of the FPD&R system does not bleed over into the general fund itself.
Yes, Sam's here, and we were in this room a month ago getting that report, you know, as the pension board, and you know, you and I have both been around this issue a while, and it was the first time that we've heard that forecast that we're going to have sufficient resources under the levy, almost with no risk that that scenario is the likely one to pay the responsibilities of the pension system. And what other city can say that? But it was you know, one of those technical reports that flow through here, but it's pretty significant given the risks in the past and the reason why you, Dan, mounted that effort to change some of the fundamentals of this pension system, but it's now really starting to pay dividends.
So I'm really, you know, at this point in time, even though we don't get value for that receivable, because if we were to measure the present value of that revenue stream going forward, we have a $2.7 billion liability. We probably have a $3.5 billion asset in terms of that receivable, but we just don't get to book that. But that's why when people ask me, what do you lose sleep at night over, Ken? I don't lose sleep over FPD&R right now. In fact, I'm much more concerned about the PERS program than I am about FPD&R, because I believe it to be much more volatile in terms of its reliance on investment earnings to stay funded, and also for some of the reforms that have been passed by the legislature, whether in fact they will sustain a legal challenge. But there are issues that we have to continue to monitor about FPD&R, but right now it's in about the best position it's been in my lifetime here working at the city, and I'm very proud of to be able to say that I think we're in a position now, we're in a monitor mode, and we're not in a worrying mode. So that's one piece of the puzzle about our declining net position, and it's a very significant piece. The other piece is dealing with when we issue bonds that are backed by the general fund and placed on our balance sheet, where we don't have an offsetting asset that we receive with those bond proceeds. So a really good example, we have several of them, but a really good example of that is how we fund the urban renewal program. For urban renewal in all the various tax increment districts, all we can do is incur debt. That's what we're required to do under state law in the Constitution, is incur indebtedness. The indebtedness could be as short as a day or it could be as long as 20 years. But when we create indebtedness, it sits on the city's balance sheet. The bond proceeds that we receive are given to PDC. And PDC then runs the programs that are part of the adopted urban renewal district. So what do they do with the money? They spend it and invest on business development, in housing programs, in public infrastructure like parks and transportation and other public facilities, property redevelopment, and then administrative costs. And I've talked with PDC about, well, when we give you that money, how much of it might turn back to the city in the form of an asset on our books and records? And they estimate that looking over the last 10 years or so, that maybe 25% might come back to us in the form of an asset. So we incur 100% of the liability, we get 25% of the value back on our books and records. It affects our net position in a negative way. However, the creation of the urban renewal district also gives us access to tax increment revenues based on the value of incremental assessed value in those districts. So we're creating a revenue stream that fully pays the debt service on those bonds. That does not impair our ability to have the general fund pay all the other activities associated with it. So again, kind of an unusual situation. Not everybody, not all urban renewal programs work the same way, but that's the way ours works, and it affects our net position. The last piece of the puzzle is depreciation of capital assets. Depreciation is a non-cash expense that affects the calculation of the city's net position. For fiscal year ending 2014, on the governmental-wide view or governmental activities piece of our CAFR presentation, depreciation totaled $192 million. And transportation was about $159 million of that. During that same time period, in terms of new capital assets put onto the books and records of the city, it totaled about $110 million. So we invested $82 million less than what was depreciated off of our books and records. And if that was the only thing that happened, our net position would have declined by that $82 million. So those are the three major things that are affecting this net position and this net position trend. So what should we do about it? I think that's the most important thing that we can now start thinking about. How can we, is this a problem? How concerned should we be, and what should we be doing? Well, I think we need to continue to monitor, you know, the city's financial condition and health and provide you more information about what this all means. Part of my bureau's mission, in fact, one of the reasons why council, I think, reestablished the CFO position was to do exactly that, was to bring you financial information and to advise you about long-term fiscal health and sustainability. And I plan on bringing back future presentations to you to help you better understand and sort of dissect this net position conversation and what's in and out and what the view really looks like if we were to take it in account for some of the things that we don't get credit for.
Mr. S., it sounds to me from what you said in the last 5 minutes that the thing that you really keep all of us up at night is that the transportation system is falling apart. Is that right?
You beat me to the punchline. But yes, I think our biggest challenge when you take apart these other things, and that's really what's important, is what's really the thing we have to worry about? The thing we have to worry about is infrastructure funding. You know, we've had success in the past with our GO bond measures, both for public safety and for parks. And, you know, that we have kind of an episodic approach to funding those capital needs. We kind of wait for a few years and then we do a bond measure. And maybe we need to think about that strategy and how we perpetuate that so that we have a more reliable access to that funding tool with the right kinds of projects. We've had council action recently that I think has really been positive. This dedication of 50% of one-time money to capital infrastructure, very important. The council budget, the budget office, during their presentation with the capital asset program, mentioned that they would like to see a reinstitution of the capital set aside, which we had, and I know Mayor Hales is aware of that, as a way to help dedicate more funds to infrastructure. But obviously, we need to develop and implement a new funding model for PBOT. That's where we're really significantly underinvesting, and that's where, if we don't solve that problem, we're really not going to get a handle on our ability to help address the declining net position that's associated with the underinvestment in infrastructure. And the last part that I think we need to pay attention to is how can we develop some sustainability metrics that will help you understand how well we're doing or not, and how do we make sure that as we develop these programs and plans that we pay attention to equity impacts? How we pay for capital, you know, does create impacts on current customers and users and citizens and those in the future. And the one thing we don't want to do is further exacerbate that if we can avoid it. So I think it's that kind of information and thinking that I'd like to share with you and spend more time with in the future to help us figure out what our plans and strategies and policies should be around this particular issue. Setting that aside, there are some other challenges I just want to make you aware of. One of the things that I have mentioned to Michelle and her team, and also I'm working with Moss Adams, is that I believe we need to shorten the time it takes to publish our CAFR. You know, right now, for the City of Portland, we typically publish the CAFR in mid-December or so. Sometimes it's even been later than that. There's an increasing drum beating going on with the Securities and Exchange Commission and with investors that buy municipal securities like what the City of Portland issues, that's way too long of time period. The information is stale. We need more timely information. The private sector turns out a CAFR in 30 days or so. They put out quarterly financial reports. We don't look that way at all. And we know that at some point in time, we're going to be under an increased burden to bring back that publication date. So I've told our team for this next year, for the CAFR that we'll present to you next year, I want to have a publication date of December 1. And in 2016, I want to see that publication date as November 1. That's still longer than what we see in the private sector, but I know we have to move that direction. We have to rethink how we get there, because I know that that's where we're going to be headed, and it's very important for us in our borrowing programs to make sure that we're going to be in compliance before we have to get there. So I like to do things on our terms, not on someone else's terms, and that's a goal and objective that's going to take an effort for us to get there that will involve all of the city accounting folks in the different bureaus as well. We will also be implementing this year GASB 68. It's their latest pronouncement affecting pensions. Now, I mentioned earlier that, for example, on FPD&R, we have a $2.7 billion liability, 1.4 of which is on our balance sheet now. Under GASB 68, all of the liability will be placed on our balance sheet. So what does that mean? Well, you can do the math. We have $212 million surplus right now in the government-wide view. You add another $1.3 billion on top of it, we're going to be negative. So we're going to have this interesting situation where we're a AAA-rated city and have been since 1974 with a negative net position on a government-wide view of over $1 billion, and it's all being driven by our implementation of GASB standards that don't really take into account very well the unique positive associated with this anomalous pension system. And that's a challenge for us to talk to about investors and make sure that they fully understand.
Well, yeah, and that's the not just the $64,000 question, a lot more than that. But do you believe, and does our financial team believe, that the bond market will continue to recognize our fiscal integrity despite that peculiar effect of following the GASB standards? Because we're fiscally sound, we're paying our bills, we have enough money coming in from the tax levy for the pension program to pay its obligations. You know, we operate on a cash basis. Our funds are in surplus. You know, there are reasons for that AAA bond rating, and you've recounted them in this report. So the question is, well, once that top line view goes negative in an accounting sense, do you believe the bond market will continue to recognize that Portland is a sound financial organization?
Yes, I do. And the reason why I do is because we've had this discussion with them for many years. The FPD&R liability is not new. We knew exactly what it was. We've explained it to them for years. They fully understand that we have a unique system. We also have a unique way to pay for it that does not impair our ability to fund governmental services. We have strong financial management policies and practices. We have decades of experience managing those liabilities. They know how we approach these kinds of problems. And when we implement GASB 68, nothing has changed other than what we present in the financial report about those things that underpin the credit rating. So I think it's an education process, but those who rate our bonds fully understand that.
Good to know.
With that, that concludes my remarks. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Mr. Salzman.
So I was interested in your discussion about the urban renewal and assets.
Mm-hmm.
So if urban renewal pays for a park or a paved road in East Portland, does that get booked as an asset?
Ultimately? If it's ultimately transferred back to the city, it's a city asset. Yes, that portion does come back to us, and that's the approximate 25% of the estimated bond proceeds that we send to PDC. That's what we get back, but it doesn't match one-to-one. That's correct.
But if PDC invests in a commercial project, it's privately owned, and that goes off our books and onto a private property owner's. And if the 30% set aside goes out into a housing project, that's privately owned and doesn't show up on our books either. Now, we collect tax revenue for the rest of time from that property, but it isn't booked as an asset to the city of Portland, right? It's owned by this housing provider or that employer or developer, but it's not owned by the city. If I got that right?
That's correct, Mayor Hales. And I think when we stand back, which this from the CAF review, it sounds kind of odd, and maybe we shouldn't be doing that, but why do we create urban renewal districts? We create urban renewal districts to deal with blight and issues associated with parts of the city that we'd like to see change, with the promise being that by making those investment and changes, that growth and value in terms of property values, jobs, and other indicators of wealth are going to be greater than they would have otherwise been. And in fact, I believe the auditor's office has done that kind of analysis and has shown that to be precisely the case. And that's the reason why we do that. And it's an example of where we're going to use our balance sheet to do right, smart things, even if it doesn't necessarily give us the best view from a financial reporting point of view, because those are the things that create value for us today and tomorrow and grow this community and make Portland a better place to live.
Right. Other questions?
I'm interested in which assets are considered saleable and which ones are not. So I noticed that Forest Park is not considered a saleable asset because we're not going to sell it. So that seems appropriate. How does the CAFR decide which things are assets that have value because they could potentially be sold and which ones are not?
I don't know if I know that can answer the question specific. I'll talk in general. I don't know whether Michelle has a specific response, but if we can't, we'll get back to you on that. You know, we typically assume that we're not going to be selling and monetizing our assets because they provide particular service to us now and going forward. If we decide that an asset is no longer needed, you know, then we have a council practice and policy of how we dispose of what we call surplus property. And it first has to be concluded that, in fact, the property is surplus and can be sold. And that takes a council action to be able to do that. And then we go through the process of selling the property. So Generally speaking, you know, we're under the operating of the assumption that the assets on our books and records aren't going to be sold unless we determine that they are no longer needed and it follows a council decision that it is, in fact, surplus property.
What about some of the assets like police cars, for example, that we know we're going to be selling it in a few years and we get a certain amount of money for that? Does that go into the books to factor against the cost of a new police car?
Well, on the fleet side, for example, we've been doing this probably for 25 years. You know, we take the cost of fleet vehicles like police cars, and bureaus like the police bureau are charged for the replacement of those vehicles each and every year. And a fund is established to make sure that when the police car is worn out, as we have determined it to be based on how much maintenance it takes or the useful life of the vehicle, that vehicle is surplused out. It's sold for whatever value we can. That money comes back into the fund. But during that time period, the police bureau is receiving an interagency agreement with OMF to pay into a fund to replenish and buy new police vehicles when needed. So we've been doing that for a long period of time. It's a very routine kind of our business operation with respect to fleet vehicles.
So why don't we do that for all of our capital assets, for example, roofs on community centers? We don't have a fund that we pay into that then can replace it.
That's a very good question. It's one of those things. What more can we do to address the timely replacement of our capital infrastructure? We do have reserves on certain buildings. They're probably not where they need to be, and having more money in reserves would be a benefit. It would help us make sure that when needed, we have the ability to do that. It gets more complicated when you start taking larger projects and go, wouldn't it be nice if we say we just spent $1.4 billion on the big pipe, and we borrowed a lot of money to pay for that, and we're going to pay those bonds off over a period of time. And that helped us lower the cost of the project and make sure that the people who use the project are actually paying for it through our rates and charges. Well, wouldn't it be nice, you know, you could argue that let's take that $1.4 billion and divide it into 20-year segments and every year put $70 million aside so that coming into the 20th year we have money to replace it. That would have a very significant increase in water sewer rates, rather, to do that. It may avoid our ability or need to borrow, but it would have a tremendous equity impact at the same time for those people who are currently using the water and sewer system, particularly the lowest income people, to be asked to pay twice for the same system. So there's a balancing act between how much money we should put away, the prudence of putting it away, the equity impacts associated with that. There's not an easy answer in reaching a conclusion. I do know one thing. We need to do more.
You said that some facilities have reserves and some don't. What's the rule for which ones do and which ones don't?
I don't know that there's a rule per se. I think we have some financial management policies that lay out what we would like to do, and it's always kind of aspirational. I think on a lot of the facilities that are managed by OMF, we've tried to establish reserves, and we do have reserves to some degree. Some bureaus have chosen that that's not where they have the resources to be able to do that, so we have inconsistent practice in terms of setting monies aside for that. And it really becomes a resource question, Commissioner, for folks.
Well, I think we had that discussion with OMF in a work session last year, that maybe the answer is to transfer all facilities to OMF and then they would all have reserves. But it seems like we should have a consistent policy. In parks, for example, it's not that we don't want to have a reserve to replace the roofs on the community center. We just don't have the money. We can't provide the same level of service with the people that takes up the majority of the parks budget and put aside money, whereas OMF has the authority to charge overhead that then can be put into a reserve. So is there any discussion of having a committee or something to continue the work of those discussions and look at how could we, it doesn't really matter to the public whether the Portland building is owned by OMF or managed by OMF versus the Charles Jordan Community Center being owned and managed by Portland Parks, they're all city assets to the public. Is there work being done to propose a more consistent policy?
I'm not sure what the status of those discussions are, Commissioner, but I can certainly find that out. I know that, you know, we continue to do a lot of work with the Capital Assets Management Group, and if this is part of that discussion about how we might make some headway, I think it dovetails nicely into the need to do more on infrastructure funding, taking care of our civic assets and these other kinds of things. And that's part of the discussion that I think is worth having as we move forward about what more should we be doing, what might that look like, and what are the consequences of doing that.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Rester, Ms. Kirby?
Great report.
Thank you
very much. So let's see if there's anyone signed up to speak on this item.
Mr. Walsh requested to speak.
Up. On this item?
Yep.
Okay. Come on up. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. Commissioner Fritz took a lot of steam out of my sails on questioning, and I appreciate that. I really do. I like commissioners that question reports. One of the I want to give you an evaluation from a citizen's position. Listening to this report, I don't think that your staff understands that there are people watching this on TV that do not have the report in front of them, that cannot flip through and try to figure out exactly what they're talking about. And that's unfortunate. And I'll give you an example. When I left this morning, my wife borrowed $7 from me. When I go home tonight, she will return that $7. That's a financial transaction. It's very simple. I know where we are. My wife Patty knows where she is. Everybody understands what's involved. Listening to that report, I asked a few people in the audience if they understood what was going on, and they agree with me. They didn't understand it because there is so much that the report is putting out. And I'm always suspicious. If you want to hide stuff, you just send out all kinds of information, and people just glass over, and then it's over, and you guys vote on it, and then it's finished. You need to figure out a way that that person watching it on TV that doesn't have access to what you have, the briefings, the book, the report, all of that, you have that, they don't. We're sitting here listening to this verbatim, and we're trying to figure out where a couple of billion dollars is going. And that report did not fulfill that. From a citizen's point of view, because I don't, if I walked out this door right now, I could not explain what that man just said. And that's a problem, because I'm an activist. I've been here for a while. I'm a little bit more knowledgeable than most people watching this on TV. And if I can't do it, that means they can't do it either. And that's the way I evaluate this stuff. If I don't understand it, and that's a little arrogant, I know. If I don't understand it, I assume that a lot of other people don't. And you need to have reports that are simple, that says, this is what we're doing, this is our credit rating, this is where we are, this is how we fund this, this is how we fund that, and it's got to be very easy and easy to understand because we're not accounting. Thank you very much for your time and patience.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog X. As I've stated in the past, I've had concerns on the retirement funds, and I understand, Mr. Commissioner Saltzman, you did a reform, and I guess in 2006, but there was still a large outstanding debt. My understanding, over $1 billion, and that was always my concern on how that was being looked at. It appears, though, that debt will come back and maybe have an effect on the bond rating, but it's been stated it won't. I do question that at this time. One of the issues I have is also on the surplus properties. I would like to have a moratorium on any surplus properties pertaining to any real estate until we begin to buy down the debt and have ample funding for transportation, which has been neglected over the last 10 years. In my opinion, when people were doing special allotments of that funding and neglecting the transportation maintenance, there are certain laws in place that they should have not been doing that, and I think that needs to be looked at very close. You need to maintain the current assets in the infrastructure. that should be a top priority, and that was neglected in transportation. And Commissioner Novick, unfortunately, has this on top of his shoulders on trying to create a way to solve that, and also Mayor Hales. So that is a big concern to me. Again, on the real estate being sold, I do not want to see any real estate assets of the city donated to any nonprofits. I want to have a moratorium set on that we have full appraisal values on these properties, and we get the full appraisal value for these properties. And if the nonprofit wants to acquire these properties, they go to a foundation and submit applications and try to receive a grant, not from the city of Portland. We have too much debt on the books at this time. We cannot be giving these assets away at low values under the current market appraisals, not estimate of values, and not appraisals that are 7 years old, and not certain people thinking they understand the values without having an independent, qualified appraiser doing that, which a bank will look at that appraisal and say, yes, we would even loan money on that based upon that value. We're giving too much money away, and we need to stop that on the surplus properties, and the surplus properties needs to be reformed. It needs to be reformed and have an understanding and have the right information on where this money is going to, especially on the fleets. We want to know how these cars are being sold after the fact, and we want to know how much money is being brought in and where that money is going. And I want to follow this very close and plan on doing that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Anyone else?
Yes, right here.
Okay, come on up.
Thank you very much, sir.
Just put your name on the record.
Barry Sutton, and I'm almost myself. I guess that doesn't matter. I guess there are people, a couple looking at me, a couple looking down. But I know that I brought up the area in back of Washington High School.
That's not what we're here about today.
But it's a possibility then that is being sold to someone to build houses on.
Not at the moment. Not at the moment.
Well, this was my understanding. Possibly it's wrong, and if you want to tell me, that's fine. Because
we can give you some information about that.
Yeah, property. Yes, but here is the place to talk about this. It could be used as an encampment for homeless people and take care of all of the people that are living on the sidewalks and stuff like that. And when it isn't, and there's that much land available, that makes me feel bad about my city, I live in.
We appreciate you bringing that point. We'll make sure you get some information about that property.
Yes, this has happened before with Dignity Village there, but the people that owned that land were not the city of Portland. It was a transportation department, and they had the people moved off of it. Here is a place three blocks for all of the homeless people in Portland, and please don't turn that down. That's a wonderful opportunity. Josh Alpert was a part of an article last week about homelessness. He said he looked all over Portland, and he couldn't find a place to move the homeless people into. Well, that is right in our face, you see. It's right in front of us. It's right in the city of Portland that all of these homeless people can be moved to. And I'm very sorry. I can't do anything myself, jump up and down or something. But the last time I spoke before city council, nobody, Commissioner Fish isn't here, including Commissioner Fish, asked me questions about this or said, oh, no, we cannot do that because, will you talk with me, converse in this moment.
We will get you information.
No, in this moment, right now.
We've got to adopt this report, Barry, so we can get you information about that property at another time, but not today.
Yes, if I could talk with Josh Albert.
You call my office. Okay.
But that is a valid place for all of the homeless.
We hear your
point.
But I'll
understand that is until I'm explained different.
We appreciate your point. Thank
you. About this, but please don't overlook that. You mustn't.
We won't. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay,
Barry.
I hope so.
You take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Anyone else on this item? Then I believe a motion. No, Barry, we got to move on.
In back of
we understand. We know where you're talking about. Okay. Any further council discussion before we take a motion? A motion to approve the report, please.
So moved.
Roll call.
Fritz.
Well, welcome to Ms. Kirby and welcome back to Mr. Rust. It's good to know that you both are here, and I certainly appreciate all the work of the staff because this is tremendously complex. I remember making a speech very much like Mr. Walsh's when I was a citizen activist, and I'm really now that I'm a part of the council, I especially appreciate all of the diligence and look at all of the people who worked so hard to work with to get the CAFR out. And so, and I also appreciate former controller Jane Kingston for her work on this. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for this report. It certainly is it is dense stuff, but it's important. And it certainly has a lot of ramifications on how we continue to operate as a city and on a sound basis, despite some of the numbers. So thank you. Aye.
Novick.
I really appreciate the clarity of the report and your spelling out, you know, what numbers look bad and what we should really be worried about and what we shouldn't. And I say that not only because you confirm my view that all we should really be worrying about is the state of our transportation system. Aye.
Hales.
Well, thank you all for an important piece of work, and we have more to discuss on this subject this morning, but the fact that we have this kind of bill of health in terms of our financial condition as a city is amazing and wonderful, and sometimes we take it for granted. I think it's also great that the council engages, as we have here today and otherwise, with our financial staff, not just about important details like what is our asset management approach to police vehicles or parks. Those are important details, but also in the big picture of how are we dealing with these big trends of assessed value growth or the change in the accounting procedures that affects how our pension system is treated, and on the effect of council policy changes that have then turned out to have pretty significant improvements in our financial position. So again, Commissioner Saltzman, the work that you did on the pension system is paying dividends, not just at the pension board itself, but now to the city's overall financial position. So I appreciate both the quality of the work and the quality of the discussion that it engenders here. It's always difficult to translate government accounting into English, and I think Mr. Russ and his team do well, given the difficulty of the subject and the rules that we operate under. But I think if you look at this report and if you hear the summary that we've heard this morning, I think it does give our citizens a good picture of how the city is being managed and what our opportunities, assets, and threats actually are. Thank you for good work. Aye. Okay, let's move on to